Hello, welcome to UK Health Radio. My name is Dora Walsh and my show is Nutrition for Health, Perfect and Wellbeing on UK Health Radio, your global feel-good radio. I've been in the field of natural and functional medicine for 14 years. I'm a qualified nutritionist and nutritional therapist, and I help my clients to overcome their chronic health concerns like hormonal imbalances, digestive problems, chronic fatigue, autoimmune conditions, skin concerns, and more. And you can find out more about me on my website, NutriHeal.net, and also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Now, today we're going to be talking about Lyme disease and actually going deeper into Lyme disease. We did speak about it recently, but there's a growing epidemic of Lyme disease. And today we're going to be looking at a new perspective on Lyme disease. And we're going to be talking to Daisy Ilchowska, who's a nutritional therapist. And she works with people with Lyme disease, with autoimmunity, with those with mold toxicity. And she's the author of Lyme in the Limelight. And this is a book that is giving a new perspective of Lyme disease. It's a roadmap for resilience and recovery and a story of hope. Daisy works with clients and with autoimmunity as well. And we're looking at the connection between Lyme disease and autoimmune conditions. So autoimmune conditions are conditions in which the immune system attacks itself. So things like rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, etc. So this is really important for anybody out there that is suffering from an autoimmune condition or from Lyme, to make that connection between the two and understand really what you can do about it. So it's a wonderful book. I do encourage you to have a look for the book on Amazon. You can get in hard copy or on Kindle. It's called Lyme in the Limelight, a new tip on Lyme disease, a road to resilience and recovery and a story of hope. Daisy Ilchowska's website is optimalhealthnutrition.co.uk. Also follow her on Facebook and Instagram at Optimal Health Nutrition, and also at The Lyme Nutritionist, because she is specializing in that area. 10% of the proceeds of her book are to Lyme Disease UK, which is a charity, and it is Lyme Disease Awareness Month this May 2022. So it's a really good time to be talking about this. Welcome to Daisy.
Hi, Dora. Thank you so much for having me again, covering such an important topic, such as Lyme disease. And thank you so much for the lovely, lovely introduction and mention of my book that is actually being published today, Lyme in the Limelight.
You sent me a copy very kindly. It's a really easy read, and I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm saying that some of these books can be hard to process, to understand, and really people just need help. So it's a really good book to really understand this important topic and this growing pandemic and of Lyme disease and how it could be an underlying factor in people's other health issues, including autoimmunity. So what is Lyme disease, Daisy?
So Lyme disease is a persistent bacterial infection which can be transmitted through tick and potentially mosquito bites, that in the acute stage would have symptoms like flu-like symptoms, and about only 20% of people would get the signature bullseye rash. At the chronic stage, however, of the disease, so past 3 months of infection, this disease can have over 40 symptoms, including migrating muscle and joint pain, muscle twitching, brain fog, severe insomnia, balance issues, headaches, light and sound sensitivity, memory issues, extreme fatigue. And at this chronic stage, Dora, it's very, very hard to diagnose this disease. And it's at this stage that can be very often misdiagnosed as other illnesses such as chronic fatigue syndrome, multiple sclerosis, and fibromyalgia. And this happens because of unreliable. I would like to stress that Lyme disease is also very, very underreported and underappreciated infection. Here in the UK, you know, official stats say that there are about 3,000 cases a year, but some research based on modelling studies is putting this number much, much higher cases. That particular research is saying that there are nearly 2.8 million people in the UK living with chronic Lyme disease, and as many as 132,000 infections, new infections every year. So that's why in the book I do mention, I draw similarities between the coronavirus pandemic and what I call the silent pandemic that is Lyme disease, which potentially has been going on for decades.
So you've mentioned a few of the symptoms. Obviously, there are symptoms from when one first gets bitten by this tick, and you get this bacteria. It's like the bullseye rash. But then I guess, you know, some people, they might not notice, or they may have symptoms later on, and they don't really know that it's Lyme. So, I mean, there's a lot going on there. That goes on to my point about how we get infected with Lyme disease. It is a tick-borne illness, isn't it?
Tick-borne illness, some research suggests that it could be passed via mosquitoes as well, and potentially other insects. We don't know enough about it. There's also some research that potentially it could be sexually transmitted to a child. So, and this is quite worrying as well, that there could be several ways of transmission. But the studies around the sexual transmission and transmission from a mother to a child are not very many. And it's really hard to study these things, really. But there is a big question mark and the potential there.
Okay. Now, why we don't know so much about Lyme? A lot of people, they don't know about it, might not know they're having it. But some people say that it's a controversial illness. Why is that?
So Lyme disease is indeed a very controversial illness. I have experienced it myself, and a few of my clients have been to doctors who do not recognize chronic Lyme disease. There is a huge misconception around it, which I think contributes to the stigma. So first of all, there is the misconception that you have to have the rash or find the tick to have the infection. And as I said, the rash only appears in 20% of cases. Then comes the unreliable testing available currently on the NHS, the ELISA and Western blot testing methods. The ELISA first line testing can be false negative, so you still have the disease, but the test showing negative in over 50% of the cases. So it's a flip of a coin chance of whether you get diagnosed or not. And then it's only when you have a positive ELISA test that the doctors would then do the more reliable Western blot. These tests also rely on the immune system response, and factors such as how long ago you were infected would impact the results. Plus, there is a bit of over-reliance on one particular type of Lyme disease bacteria called Borrelia burgdorferi, which was the originally found bacteria, but we now know in the research community there could be about 100 varieties of that bacteria. So if you are lucky enough to actually get a positive test, which can take months, if not years, whilst you're deteriorating, most doctors would believe that a month's worth of antibiotic treatment, you know, such as a treatment with doxycycline, would cure that infection. And that's not true. And when usually people come back with persistent symptoms, they're a bit left in no man's land, because the medical knowledge at the moment is that's all you do. You give a month's worth of antibiotics and people are cured, but that's not the case. In my book, I examine the Lyme disease infection as a persistent bacterial infection, but also as one of the infections that triggers multiple autoimmune diseases. This bacteria is much more sophisticated than some viruses, such as the coronavirus, for example. And this is something I touch on the book. You know, we all talk about these spike proteins on the coronavirus, and there's about 27 of them. And they all do different things to the immune system. Well, the Lyme disease bacteria, it's unusual in a sense that it acts more like a virus, and it has got about 120 of these lipoproteins that are very similar to the spike viruses, spikes on the coronavirus, and all of these can do different things to the immune system. So, and then you have the controversy about the chronic Lyme disease symptoms, the multitude of them. You know, you can have up to 30 or 40 symptoms that wax and wane at the same time. And some of them can be quite incredible ones, such as twitching and buzzing muscles, burning sensations, on the bottom of your feet, objects appearing in your eyesight, total change of personality. And, you know, sometimes, you know, just listening at these symptoms and not being aware with Lyme disease would think that whoever's having these symptoms is probably having some mental health issues. Mm. So to summarize, the controversy is included in a lot of aspects of Lyme disease, including testing and detection, symptoms, treatment, the current understanding about this infectious disease.
It seems like it's really not properly diagnosed, and then people can have, as you mentioned, they may have these mental symptoms, they may have buzzing muscles, burning sensations in their feet, twitching, and the doctors are going to think it's something else, so they're not going to be treated. And then there's going to be a controversy as to, are they actually suffering from Lyme disease? Some doctors may not be that Lyme aware.
Yes, and that's one of my main goals with the book, is to try and spread awareness as much as possible, really, because catching this dangerous disease at the acute stage is really, really important. It's almost impossible to treat and cure somebody when it's gone to the chronic stage, especially when Lyme disease has got affiliation for the brain. It's one of these bacteria that crosses the blood-brain barrier, and it has been implicated in neurological autoimmune conditions such as MS, Parkinson's, and even motor neuron disease or ALS. And these are things that I talk in the book. So once you get to that stage, once the Borrelia, the corkscrew like Lyme disease bacteria, reaches the brain, it's almost impossible to treat it and eradicate it. And that's why raising awareness about the acute stage of infection, or even just admitting, hang on, our testing is not reliable, let's look at that, let's see what we can do about that, is really, really important. I suffered quite a lot with Lyme disease myself. That's part of the reason why I'm so passionate about it. Really, I don't want anybody else to go through this, ever.
I hear you. Now, Daisy, your book, Lyme in the Limelight, A New Perspective on Lyme Disease, A Roadmap for Resilience and Recovery, touches on and talks about the connection between Lyme disease and autoimmune disease. Now, how did you get to know about this? Is it, you mentioned that you had Lyme disease. Is that how you came to study nutrition and then work out the connection with autoimmune disease?
Yes. So when I got Lyme disease, I have already retrained as a nutritional therapist. And I originally decided to retrain as a nutritional therapist because I had three autoimmune conditions myself, including a very difficult to manage autoimmune condition called rheumatoid arthritis. So I was very much aware about the impact of nutrition on autoimmunity. I was very much aware about some bacterial triggers for autoimmunity, you know, some bacteria like Klebsiella and Helicobacter pylori. So once I got really, really unwell with Lyme disease, and I was lucky enough to be able to travel to Germany for treatment and tell me what was going on with me or offer any treatment, I started wondering whether I got so unwell so quickly because of the impact of autoimmunity. Did Lyme disease kind of fast-track that autoimmunity? And that's why I ended up with such severe neurological symptoms. I mean, within 2 months of the initial Lyme disease symptoms, I was getting non-epileptic seizures and severe brain fog and fatigue. So once I had the treatments in Germany, I still had quite a lot of work to do and I was very, very unwell. The sort of the researcher in me, because I've just published some research on specific nutritional interventions in rheumatoid arthritis, was wondering, I do wonder what made everything worse in my case. Is there a kind of a link between autoimmunity and Lyme disease? And could indeed Lyme disease trigger some kind of autoimmunity? And I went back to research platforms such as PubMed, and indeed there was quite a lot of research there, but it doesn't seem to, there hasn't been anyone that has kind of collated all that research and linked it in a way that links this very stigmatized, dangerous, hard to detect disease to specifically autoimmune diseases. And there are multitudes of autoimmune diseases that are linked to it, from, you know, Hashimoto's to multiple sclerosis to Parkinson's, rheumatoid arthritis and ALS. I'm not saying that, Lyme disease is the only trigger of these. We know with autoimmunity, there could be several triggers, including things like nutritional deficiencies, and toxin exposure. But I'm saying that Lyme disease is one of the underappreciated triggers of autoimmunity. So it all came from my personal journey and experience with the disease.
Well, we're going to explore that a bit more in your book, Lyme in the Limelight, A New Perspective on Lyme Disease, A Roadmap for Resilience and Recovery, after a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with ZeroZilchZip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit ZeroZilchZip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Dora Walsh on UK Health Radio, talking to Daisy Ilchowska, nutritional therapist at optimalhealthnutrition.co.uk. Now, Daisy, you have a wonderful book that's out today called Lyme in the Limelight, looking at those new perspectives on Lyme disease, making that connection between Lyme disease and autoimmunity. And you've suffered from both yourself, so you have a firsthand view on this. Now, tell us a bit more about what your book covers and how people can support themselves.
So the book is really made up of three parts that are slightly different, and there are different takeaways from each part. So the first part is my own Lyme disease story, including a detailed diary of treatments for the eradication of the bacteria that I underwent in German hospital at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic. Really, I didn't have much choice because I was going from doctor to doctor and I was really, really unwell with multitude of symptoms. I had a numerous false negative test for Lyme disease as well. It was a very, very difficult journey for myself, for the people close to me. And unfortunately, no one here in the UK could help me. So that's what the first part is about. The middle part is I kind of put my research hat on and actually delve into that research of how Lyme disease is linked to multiple autoimmune conditions. I try and explain it in simple terms. There are particular mechanisms that I explain in the book that are called molecular mimicry, and that's one of the most common mechanisms that via which Lyme triggers autoimmunity. Basically, it's the case of mistaken identity, because the Lyme disease bacteria is so unusual in a way that it has these 120 lipoproteins on the cell surface. These tend to cross-react with different parts of the bodily tissues, either the myelin sheet around the nerves or part of the thyroid tissue or some of the brain cells. And it depends really, and they can also cross-react with parts of the cardiac muscle. And in some rare occasions, you can actually get severe heart disease that's being triggered by Lyme disease. So that's what's the middle part, is the justification of this new perspective on Lyme disease, because even the people that do understand Lyme disease in the Lyme disease community, there is a bit of over-reliance on just eradicating the bacteria or killing off the bacteria, which is, of course, really, really important. But my point is that once this disease has triggered your immune system to self-attack, as you mentioned earlier, you have to, you know, even if you've been lucky enough to eradicate the bacteria, you then have to modulate your immune system to calm down that autoimmunity. Once autoimmunity has been started, it can't be just stopped. And then in the third part of the book, I actually present a detailed manual of what to do to actually calm down the immune system and modulate it via diet and supplements and lifestyle changes. So there are different takeaways from all the three parts of the book that readers can take away from it.
How is this work panning out with your own clients? What kind of results are you getting with this approach?
In most of my clients, I always check for autoimmunity, and very often you do get some elevated autoimmune markers, you know, especially if you're getting the reactive arthritis or joint pain that you can get sometimes with Lyme disease, or sort of the cardiovascular issues, things like palpitations. These are some of the signs that autoimmunity is already has started. So I do, you know, get to work with clients on different parts of their Lyme disease journey. Some of them have been trying to eradicate the bacteria for years. Others are just realizing that they have Lyme disease. But with each one, we apply either the whole protocol, parts of the protocol, to modulate the immune system. And I think that's one of the most important things to do, alongside strategies for the eradication of bacteria.
I love what you said and your comment on, in the mainstream medical paradigm, there has been this over-reliance on killing the bacteria. But really, there's a need to do a lot more than that. It seems that you're taking a much more intelligent, all-encompassing approach to addressing this on all levels. So not only killing the bacteria, that person may have had antibiotics, but you're doing something yourself, obviously, with natural agents, but then also modulating that immune system so that person is strengthened, so that they can deal with the infection and prevent further problems. I think that is a wonderful approach. And my question is really, but for instance, there are many stages to Lyme disease, and you mentioned, you know, as it gets further down the trajectory, if it crosses the blood-brain barrier, is there hope for somebody like that?
I think there is. I think it's a very, very difficult journey. This happened to me, and you literally can feel that your brain is on fire, that your nervous system both your central nervous system and your peripheral nervous system are really, really affected. So it could be anything from muscle weakness and muscle twitching to speech issues, vision issues, severe brain fog, Bell's palsy, you know, the condition where one part of your face freezes. And in more serious cases, the Lyme disease can trigger neurological autoimmunity via something called microglial activation. So the microglia are the immune cells of the brain. Up until about 20 years ago, we thought that the brain is an immune privileged place in the body, and there can't be autoimmunity in the brain. We now know this isn't true. We now know that things that cross the blood-brain barrier, such as the Borrelia bacteria, can actually start to be attacked by these microglial cells that support the neurons in the brain. And unfortunately, sometimes in the crossfire of this fight in the brain between the microglia and the Borrelia, there could be damage to parts of the brain. There could be an initiation of autoimmune response, and that's when you're looking at more severe neurological autoimmune conditions such as Parkinson's and ALS and multiple sclerosis. But there is hope. I've spent quite a bit of time looking at PubMed and research more specifically about this, the neurological autoimmunity element, and how you can stop the progression of that microglial activation and switch it up. So one of the things is you have to use treatments for the eradication of the bacteria that cross the blood-brain barrier. And I'm not a doctor, but things like IV antibiotics such as ceftriaxone can cross the blood-brain barrier. Unfortunately, you know, chronic Lyme disease patients are being given like something like 2 weeks worth of doxycycline, which is an antibiotic that does not cross the blood-brain barrier. Of course, there are herbs that different protocols that cross the blood-brain barrier that can be used. But then there are also nutrients that you have to use to help regenerate parts of the brain and modulate that brain immune system. You know, things like high doses of glutathione, resveratrol, vinpocetine, different types of vitamin E. You know, so in short, it's not an easy journey once the Borrelia gets to the brain, but there is quite a lot that you can do about it.
It sounds like some of the people that are suffering for certain conditions today, like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, possibly, could Lyme disease be one of the possible culprits? Is that right?
Absolutely. And the very well-known neurodegenerative and Alzheimer's diseases researcher, Dr. Del Bresden, who he's very popular with his Alzheimer's protocols. He has written a brilliant book called The End of Alzheimer's. He does talk about Alzheimer's being triggered by a number of things, and he does mention Lyme disease as one of these triggers. He does say neurodegenerative conditions like Alzheimer's, it's like a roof with 36 holes in it, that you have to plug nutritional deficiencies, toxins, raised blood sugar levels throughout the life. But he also talks about these bacterial infections and toxins that can cross the blood-brain barrier and cause these issues. So absolutely. And as we know, there is a pandemic a bit of Alzheimer's and neurodegenerative diseases at the moment. And there is not much hope in terms of pharmaceuticals for them. I think, in fact, for Alzheimer's, there hasn't been a new pharmaceutical or indeed a successful pharmaceutical agent found.
Yeah, you're right there. No, you mentioned that doctors, they'll use a number of different antibiotics and that some are not effective at crossing the blood-brain barrier and some others are, and would be one of the keys on the antibacterial side for the brain. Did you work alongside doctors to support Lyme disease clients? I mean, how does it work? Because if doctors are not that aware of what to do, it seems like they just use a certain type of therapy. It's not getting to the cause. Are you kind of working alongside them in an integrative way?
So I do in some doctors, but unfortunately, Dora, to my knowledge, in the whole of UK, which is about 65 million people, and potentially, as I mentioned, 3 million people with chronic Lyme disease, there is about 4 doctors that understand Lyme disease.
NHS or private?
And unfortunately, they're all private, as far as I'm aware. I think one of them, because he does quite a lot of research, Professor Jack Lambert, I think he might be on the NHS as well. But doctors, to my knowledge, the majority of doctors don't understand Lyme disease. And that's why some people in the acute stage or when they're wondering about treatment and diagnosis, such as myself, they literally have to spend all their savings, you know, sell their possessions, remortgage their houses and seek treatments abroad in countries like Germany, where, you know, some of the treatments like hypothermia and IV antibiotics can cost more than the deposit on somebody's home. So it's a huge huge blow in terms of getting better, finding a reliable testing, actually finding reliable treatment, and it's a difficult journey, including huge financial loss of relationships, loss of income, loss of jobs. The implications of Lyme disease are just tragic.
It's shocking. Now, you mentioned that there are other conditions related to Lyme disease, and we've talked a bit about that. You mentioned Parkinson's potentially. We talked about Alzheimer's. We talked about the autoimmune conditions. Are there any other conditions that are related to Lyme disease?
So, yeah, in addition to the neurodegenerative conditions and the autoimmune conditions like MS and rheumatoid arthritis and Hashimoto's, also another thing that makes Lyme disease quite complicated disease is that when you're bitten by something or some of these bacteria is being transferred in other ways, which we don't know for sure about yet, You very rarely just get Lyme disease. You can get these co-infections, so bacterial infections like Bartonella, which can severely affect the nervous system too, or Mycoplasma, or Babesia, which is a parasitic infection. So in fact, you not only get Lyme disease in some cases, but you can get up to half a dozen of these other conditions at the same time, which make a quite a complicated clinical picture with varying symptoms. For example, somebody that just has Lyme disease and Babesia, which is a parasite that lives in your red blood cells, might have quite a difficult clinical presentation of symptoms to somebody that has Lyme disease, Bartonella, and Mycoplasma, for example, with Bartonella giving some of the really signature strange symptoms. You can get scratch marks on your back. Sometimes, in fact, it's called cut scratch disease. You can get these buzzing muscles. You can get burning sensations on the bottom of your feet. So, co-infections in Lyme disease is one common thing. Then you also have reactivation of retroviruses. So things like Epstein-Barr virus can get reactivated during the infection with Lyme disease because of something called the cell danger response. Then you also get a whole host of what I call in the book related and complicated conditions that are nearly always, in my experience, find with Lyme disease. And this is things like mycotoxin illness, things like heavy metal accumulation, things like mast cell activation syndrome and histamine intolerance. So, and for me, for somebody to truly understand Lyme disease, they have to first of all understand the complexity and of you know, trying understand and diagnose things on the co-infection side, but then think about these related and complicated things. And because, for example, also the symptoms of Lyme disease and symptoms of mycotoxin or mold illness, which we've talked about previously on your show, can really, really overlap, for example.
Now, your book is a really weighty book. It's dense. It's a wonderful book, Lyme in the Limelight, a new perspective on Lyme disease, a roadmap for resilience and recovery. And I'm looking through it now. And I'd love to talk a bit about what people can do in terms of their diet and lifestyle. Obviously, you need to read this book to know how to follow it, because there's a lot in here. But I'd love to talk about that just after a few messages from our commercial partner.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to UK Health Radio, Dr. Walsh, Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing. And this week we're talking with Daisy Ilchowska, author of Lyme in the Limelight, A New Perspective on Lyme Disease, A Roadmap for Resilience and Recovery. Now, Daisy, it's a wonderful book available on Amazon, in Harvey or on Kindle. And it's this really new way of looking at Lyme. And we talked about the connection to all the different autoimmune diseases. We talked about corona as well. And also things like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. So you're kind of threading a lot of things together. And I think it's a really important book to read for people that are experiencing those conditions or are concerned that there could be a connection, and try and know what they can do for themselves in terms of their diet, their lifestyle, etc. Let's talk a bit about diet, because I think some people are still not making the connection between what they're eating and their immunity and their brain health, their well-being. And I love people do like yourself to spread the word, because as you mentioned, and as we talked about before, there is this over-reliance on just getting rid of the bacteria. We'll just get rid of that, or we'll just put this thing in to curb those symptoms. But that doesn't really strengthen the body overall unless you strengthen the environment. How can diet help you to do that?
So as you say, diet is absolutely essential. So considering my whole point is that Lyme disease can drive a multitude of autoimmune conditions, one of the best types of diet that I promote in the book is modified autoimmune paleo diet, meaning that you exclude inflammatory foods such as gluten that's found in grains and food products such as bread and biscuits and pasta, include very inflammatory cow's dairy products. You include plenty of non-starchy, seasonal, ideally organic vegetables, plenty of meat, organ meats, fish, some eggs if you can tolerate them. I also cover things like lectins and oxalates that, depending on your presentation of symptoms, you might have to consider changing as well. But one of the main things that you can do, because there is a lot of oxidative stress going on when you're dealing with this persistent bacterial infection that's driving autoimmunity, there is a lot of inflammation that breaks down muscle tissues and things like that. So you need a lot of antioxidants, you need a lot of good complete protein, you need a lot of nutrients, and therefore that is one of the almost the easiest things that you can do to ensure that you are nurturing yourself and you're not making autoimmunity worse. So I'll spend the whole chapter talking about the autoimmune diet. But I promote something called modified autoimmune paleo. The modified element of it is that, yes, you can have eggs if you're not reactive to them. And yes, you can have a bit of goats or sheep's dairy and products, but cow's dairy, because of the casein in it, the very inflammatory protein similar to gluten, is a big no-no. And I do include a bit more detail in the book. I do include some easy cooking hacks and shopping hacks, because, you know, when you're dealing with Lyme disease, you're not exactly up to you don't feel up for cooking much. So I try and simplify it as much as I can as well.
It's wonderful. I definitely encourage people to read it. I'm all for hacks, because as we know, we see clients, and when people are very unwell, they barely have any energy. So anything that makes getting that nutrition in very easy, it is really, really valuable, because, you know, the person is tired enough without having to cook a really complex recipe. And I've seen, you know, sometimes when you see these recipe books written by nutritionists and you're like, oh my goodness, do you really have the time to make all these things, especially if they're unwell? So hacks are so important for health. What about lifestyle and sleep and things like that? Do you cover those kind of topics in the book?
I do. So sleep is one of the major, major issues with Lyme disease. In fact, research shows that that's one of the hallmark symptoms. You know, I mentioned that there could be over 40 symptoms with Lyme disease. About 41% of people with Lyme disease will have this persistent, in some cases, totally unexplained, especially if they haven't had the diagnosis, insomnia. So I do spend the whole chapter talking about things, what you can do to try and improve sleep, because if you haven't slept enough, that increases inflammation, increases inflammatory cytokines or inflammatory messages such as IL-6, which can make pain much, much worse. And I also talk about things like detoxification. You know, with Lyme disease, your body is dealing with quite a high toxic load. So I talk about in the book, I have a whole chapter on detoxification and what you can do, from simple hacks in your home about avoiding plastics and ventilating and taking your shoes off at the door, to a bit more complicated strategies and supplements that you can take about detoxification. I also talk about stress and stress management, because with Lyme disease, very often with complex chronic conditions, if there is any kind of underlying trauma, that tends to resurface. So I encourage a lot of my clients and refer them to specialists to deal with that element, because trauma can also have an impact on the immune system. But in the book, I talk about simple relaxation strategies, breathing exercises and meditation and things like that that people can do. So there are more complex things that people can do. You know, I talk about specific supplements and dietary changes, and there are very, very simple things that people can do. But I try and cover all the elements, you know, from stress management to detoxification, to diet, to some supplements. You know, even as simple as blue light blocking devices. We're all exposed to a lot of blue light, which can, again, trigger, it could be one of the triggers of autoimmunity as well, and can affect sleep. So I do try and kind of cover all aspects, really.
You're looking at everything. And what about somebody that is being treated maybe for Lyme disease with the antibiotics? Would they be able to read your book and follow your plan alongside that, what they're doing themselves with their mainstream doctors?
Absolutely. So the book is all about the modulation of the immune system. So the sooner you start that, the better, because you could have the bacterial infection could have already triggered the autoimmunity, and autoimmune conditions actually can be, you know, can be started in your immune system up to 10 years before they're diagnosed. So you can start as soon as possible. And these treatments can be, these protocols can be, you know, carried out alongside antibiotic treatments or you're doing with your doctor, or alongside herbal protocols you're doing for Lyme disease. So just to be clear, so there is the, with Lyme disease, what I say is that you have to deal with the three I's. So the infection, which most people focus on, and rightly so, but I think there is an over focus on that, as I said. The inflammation, which can be linked to partly to immune dysregulation. And the third eye is the immune dysregulation. So infection, inflammation, and immune dysregulation, which is the autoimmunity element of it.
I've got you totally. Well, it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you on my show this week. I'm really enjoying the book, and I hope other people get to read it. It's available on Amazon, Lyme in the Limelight, A New Perspective on Lyme Disease, A Roadmap for Resilience and Recovery, and A Story of Hope. So definitely look out for that. And the author is Daisy Ilchovska. She's a nutritional therapist, and she runs optimalhealthnutrition.co.uk. And you can also follow Daisy on her social media, which is at Optimal Health Nutrition on Facebook and Instagram, and also at The Lyme Nutritionist. And until next week, thank you and goodbye.